Being a candidate is such a, you're in such a vulnerable position sometimes because you want to please. And
so I'm curious, how do you feel about those types of interviews?
Oh my gosh, Tan, this is probably one of the hottest topics in PM interviewing.
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where we share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Tan.
And I'm Sophia. On our podcast, we've talked about career from many different angles. So I'll give you a quick rundown because we have about 200 episodes now. So Tan and I both started working full-time in tech about 4 years ago. So you can hear all about our journeys starting working full-time and navigating various challenges, particularly, and some are specific to us and our identity as Asian American women in tech. And then we did a whole series talking about career transitions and exploring possibilities that you didn't know existed and you may not have been encouraged to even consider. And one of my favorite career transition stories is Tan's transition from software engineering to film, and you'll get to hear a lot of her reflections on that transition. And another angle we've talked about career is we've talked about creating your own definition of success and your own job requirements while staying open-minded and flexible about the different ways to meet your needs. And we've also shared interviewing tips, tips for representing yourself and your experience, tips for asking good questions, and also for managing stress because interviewing can be a very long process. So we've linked all of these relevant episodes in the episode description for you to check out later. And aside from these episodes, we have about 200 episodes that we've released every Sunday, wherever you listen to podcasts. After this episode, there's a ton of other great content for you to explore. You can also follow us on Instagram at Bamboo and Glass to see memorable quotes and highlights from all of these different episodes. We are talking about career today, and Tan, you actually suggested the topic for today. So what is the topic and how did you come up with the idea?
Our topic today has to do with red flags in the interview process. So this is a little bit different from our Navigating the Workplace episodes, as well as our Guide to the Job Hunt episode. In our Guide to the Job Hunt episode, we touched very briefly on interviewing, but interviewing is such a big part of the process when it comes to figuring out where you're going to go for your next job. And I know that we both have a lot of experience with interviews, primarily maybe as the interviewees, as the people who are vying for a job, but also on the flip side of being an interviewer. And so I think that's really helpful context because we have been able to be on the side where we know what the criteria is and what we are evaluating for. And I think that gives us a little bit of more ammo when we go into interviews as interviewees to know what to look out for, especially when it comes to red flags, because none of us want to be in the position of interviewing for a job and later finding out that it's a very toxic workplace to begin with. So what are some ways that we can find out ahead of time that this place might not be the best environment for us? And I think that can really happen in the interview process because there's a lot of human connection that happens at this point. So is there anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I'm particularly excited to talk to you about this because this episode isn't just going to be specific to tech, because you've interviewed for roles in tech and media and entertainment. You and I have both interviewed for full-time roles and contract roles, which are different. The process and expectations and things to look out for are different. And we've also been on the hiring side. So this is going to be a really full and rich conversation. And it's also going to be a conversation that I wish I had heard, you know, earlier in my career. There are so many times when I just really wanted a job. I saw the red flags, but didn't want to think too much about them. And I took the job and it just ended up being a really difficult place to be. And I felt really burned out. And so we're sharing a lot of things that we learned the hard way and hope that none of our listeners have to learn it the hard way.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. What's the first red flag you've seen in the interview process, Sophia?
All right, so I'll break down the red flag, what this red flag could mean, and how it might impact your experience of the job. So we're going to get really tangible here. So the first red flag is the interview process seems too fast and interview questions seem too simple. So what does this mean? This could mean that the team is desperate to hire, maybe because a lot of people left recently and they have to fill a lot of roles, right? Another reason. This could also mean that the team is really desperate to hire and isn't doing it thoughtfully. As a PM, as a product manager, something that I really watch out for is making sure that the team understands like what they want out of a product manager. And so if the interview process seems too fast and the question seems too simple, they might not even know what they want out of you. And so they might just expect you to do everything, or maybe they might expect you to not get to do anything at all. And so this is like one thing I would pay attention to. So how would this actually impact your experience of the job, right? Like, why is it bad to join a team that's like desperate to hire? So you want to work with people who are qualified and prepared to do their roles so that you can learn from them and not be held back from them. Like, if your teammates don't have the skill or the ability to learn the skills for the job, you might end up spending your precious time and energy doing their job, which is really frustrating. And it also takes away time from you doing your own job, which is important for getting promoted and getting recognized and refining your own skills. Have you ever experienced this? Or like, I'm curious if this resonates with you or not, or if this is like a new red flag that you know to look for now.
I think that I've been on the interviewer side where we have been desperate to hire. And I think that's just not a win-win situation for either party, because for the interviewer, we're kind of coming from a place of like, we haven't yet found the right person. And now we're kind of throwing all the eggs into any basket. And I think that just kind of lowers the bar of whether it's just the ability of the people or also the culture fit that this person would bring to the table. And I think that's a lose-lose situation, because then the candidate who we end up hiring, like, they don't know that that was the context, and they don't know that maybe perhaps if we had had more time or had other factors in play that would have changed the trajectory, then maybe it's hard for them to know that we actually didn't think they were a good fit. And I think a candidate is just as much relying on the company or the interviewer to kind of vet the process and really assure like, hey, you would be a good fit for the job and this team would be a good fit for you. I think we always forget it's a two-way street. I have not had the experience though of two simple questions. So that one's very interesting.
And I guess maybe people might be wondering, how do you know if an interview is too simple or too difficult? So one thing you can do, at least as a product manager, is there are a lot of websites that actually spell out the interview process at different companies. So if you see that most other companies of the caliber you're interested in, maybe they have 5 rounds of interviews, but this company only had 2. That seems like a big disparity. Or you can look at the questions that are listed on Glassdoor or Blind. This is a little bit more specific to tech. And if it seems like other people are getting asked really like, you know, meaty and interesting questions about like strategy and difficult, you know, scenarios, but you're getting asked questions like, how would you blank do something very simple? It might mean that they're asking you to do really simple work that you don't find a lot of enjoyment or challenge from doing. So those are some resources for figuring out if you are experiencing this red flag.
Yeah. And I think maybe just to add on to this really quickly is that maybe if this company knows that they're an anomaly in the interviewing process of like they are doing much less rounds or they are giving much easier questions, I think if they kind of vet that for you, like justify that for you, I think that can really comfort people too. I think it also doesn't hurt to ask about that either to just get a better sense of that, because maybe they're trying to change the culture of the industry and trying to do things a little bit differently. They're not just desperate. So always don't be afraid to ask.
Right. Oh, so good. All right. Do you want to introduce the second red flag?
Yeah. So the second red flag is every interviewer's understanding of the job scope and responsibilities seem different. This one is really tricky, because I think it can be easy to gaslight yourself into believing that you're just not getting a good grasp of the job scope and responsibilities, when in actuality, it is that every interviewer has a different understanding of the job scope and responsibilities. So what this could mean for the job is that your teammates have different and potentially conflicting opinions about your scope, aka what decisions you have the authority to take and what challenges you get to take on. And alongside that, they have different opinions about what success means and what is going to be the success metric of the work that you do. I think this is really confusing when you're first starting off at this new job of not really quite knowing where things are going to be going and what the goal of this job entails. And so how this can impact your experience is that you might expect a large and exciting scope for your role, but others will be territorial about scope and try to take away opportunities from you. Or you'll also have to spend a lot of time defending your role to others instead of just getting to do your job. And so things that you might have to spend time defending are what decisions you have the authority to make, what challenges you get to take on, and what resources you have to do your job. And I think that the interview process is a really great indicator of all of these things that could happen, especially if the interviewers are people that you are going to work closely with. Mm-hmm. I think that the interviewers should know where their money is going, where the company's money is going, into making sure that they get to hire the best teammate for whatever gap they have in the work that they're doing. And if they're not able to clarify that very well and you're starting to get confused, chances are it's not you, it's probably the job description and the job responsibilities.
Yes, this is a red flag that I have seen a lot. And it's actually one that I was really surprised to experience, because I was like, product manager, software engineer, isn't that obvious what they do? But it's not. Every different company has a different understanding of what the role entails, but beyond that, like what that role entails within this specific company. Like, which exact projects are you going to get to work on? Are you going to, do you have, let's say you're a product manager, do you get to work with a product marketing manager or do you not? And do you have to be the product marketing manager? And so I think like one thing that you could try to clarify is, who are the other stakeholders or people that you're going to work with? And if you don't have a product marketing manager, you might end up doing their job, which means that you have less time doing what you want to do and more time having to learn someone else's job and not get to just rely on their expertise. So this is a very big red flag to watch out for.
Yeah, definitely. And if I can add something alongside this as a contractor or a freelancer, you really want to make sure that people know what your responsibilities are, because you are by default in a more vulnerable position compared to a full-time person. As a contractor, you want to make sure that you're not going to be given more work than you had signed up for a lot of it. And you also want to make sure that people respect you just as much as a full-time person. And I have also been in that situation where I get a lot of ambiguity in terms of what the scope of responsibilities are. So something that I would recommend, especially for freelancers or contractors that are discussing rates and whatnot, is to get the scope of responsibilities in writing so that you have a paper trail to refer back to. If someone tries to add on another responsibility, you can refer to this document and say, hey, this is the list of responsibilities I signed up for and I'm getting paid for. I am open to doing this extra responsibility, but could we maybe have another discussion about compensation then?
Yeah. Or if you're not open to taking on that additional responsibility, you can ask for help prioritizing. And again, referring to that original list could be really helpful. So, definitely. Yes, thank you for bringing up this second red flag. The third red flag is, let's say you ask, what's a challenge that your organization or department has recently faced? And you get a really vague answer that sounds like an excuse or that blames others, rather than a sincere and straightforward answer about what the department has done in response to this challenge. So what could this red flag mean? It could mean that the interviewer or leadership is oblivious to employees' experience in the workplace, which is bad because ideally your employer is proactive about receiving feedback and implementing feedback. But if your leadership is oblivious to employees' experiences, this could mean that they're not paying attention to employee feedback when it's given, or worse, they might be shutting down feedback when people give it, or even penalize employees who speak up and give feedback. So these are all things that you don't want to work in an environment where this is the case. This red flag, I think I just explained like the worst case scenario. A maybe more charitable interpretation is that this leadership team or interviewer does listen to feedback, but they don't prioritize figuring out how to resolve the issue, or they don't feel empowered or supported or able to make changes. And that's why they can name the challenge, but be very vague about the vague about how they address the challenges. They just don't feel like they have the support to do that, which is a really hard situation for them to be in. And it's understandable, but also it makes your life harder too. So pay attention to it. So if you're seeing this red flag, what could this mean? How could this show up or impact your experience of the job if you were to take this job? One, you might be penalized for sharing feedback. And if you're penalized for sharing feedback, that could be reflected in your promotion progress and speed. It could be reflected in whether or not you get a raise, whether you get opportunities that you want, how leadership talks about you behind your back and influences other people's perception of you. This red flag could also manifest in you not getting support from leadership to resolve issues, right? Because if your interviewer, who's like more senior than you, isn't able to use their clout and their authority to get help, you probably won't be able to get that much help either. And also, the team morale is probably going to suck if your teammates feel like there's no accountability for ineffective teammates and ineffective leadership. So all in all, this is a big red flag that has a lot of negative implications for your day-to-day. And I would be wary of taking a job that if I see this red flag in the process.
Yeah. I really like how you included this charitable scenario, because there is totally an instance where they do listen to feedback. And I think the lack of support and empowerment is a real thing. And especially if maybe the person you're talking to is in middle management and they feel extra stuck because they are technically have more power and influence over the people that are reporting to them, but they also still feel like they can't really make the needle move with upper management, that can be really difficult. But you just need to keep that in mind and be aware that you may not get the support that you think you would want to get. Our fourth red flag has to do with interviewers or recruiters dismissing your concerns about taking the role and instead of working towards a solution. So this one is really important, because all jobs, and I think this is maybe like a big veil being taken off since like post-grad, which is that all jobs are kind of flexible. Things can be adjusted to the person, especially if that is the right person for the job. You'd be surprised of what things you can negotiate for, what things you can advocate for if given the right environment, and also given assuming that you do your work really well too. Which I think, honest, as a baseline, I think generally probably the people listening to this podcast and just between the two of us, we're always going to work hard and always going to want to deliver really great results. So there could be an instance where maybe you share kind of concerns about work-life balance, let's say, and the interviewers kind of dismiss that because they're like, well, isn't this like a worthy job that you want to go for and want to take advantage of?
Do you care? Are you even passionate? If you were passionate, you would not be complaining.
And I think what this could mean is that it is, this job is in a culture of folks who feel entitled to your work and loyalty rather than continuously trying to improve to earn your engagement and earn your hard labor. I also think this could mean that this is a culture of folks who are also just entitled themselves, people who maybe believe that career is the number one priority, which not to say that it isn't for most people, but it's kind of being ignorant and not having an empathetic ear to maybe the concerns that you have. Because maybe you're a mother who wants, you know, enough time to spend with their kids, and they're just, you're just asking for remote work. And if they're, if they respond in a really crass way rather than just being firm, there's a difference between being crass and being firm in their non-negotiables, because companies have their non-negotiables too, but if they respond in a way that's very dismissive of this desire that you have, then that's probably not, that's probably pretty indicative of how people will respond to your feedback. So very similarly to the previous red flag, in terms of your experience of this job, people again might be less likely to receive feedback and also want to work towards a solution or work towards a compromise of some sort.
Yeah, I like how you use the word entitlement, because that bothers me so much. It's like, yes, a job is a two-way street. Like, I am grateful for the job that I have, but also I have a lot of abilities that I could take somewhere else. And so I think it's just like important to work with people who have a posture of humility and who recognize that there's always room for improvement to, mm-hmm. you know, make a better scenario or working situation for people. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. The fifth red flag is when people share unconstructive criticism about their teammates or leadership during the interview. So during the interview, people tend to be, just a little bit of context, people tend to be on their best behavior. Because mm-hmm. as a company, when you interview people, it's a lot of time and resources, and you want to find the right candidate quickly. And if you as the candidate, if you're already near the end of the process, the team really wants you to do well in the interview and come join them, right? So then they don't have to keep spending all of their time interviewing people rather than doing their job. So people should be on their best behavior. Interviewers should be on their best behavior. But if they are sharing a lot of unconstructive criticism, what this could mean is that these people, these teammates, don't feel heard when they bring up concerns during their work. And so they just feel like they have no space to vent except for venting to a candidate. Or it can mean that these people don't have the agency or support to make changes. And so that's why their criticism is unconstructive, because they try to be constructive, but there's really, like, being constructive has taken them nowhere. So, if I experienced this in an interview, I would think twice about taking this job. And what this means for your experience of the job is that you could experience the exact same challenges that people are talking about today. And they're just giving you a shortcut to understanding what your day-to-day might look like.
Mm-hmm. That's so real. Yeah. I know that you just said that people tend to be on their best behavior when they're doing an interview or when they're interviewing someone. But mm-hmm. my next red flag also kind of has to do with that. My next red flag has to do with intimidation tactics that are used in an interview process. So
I can think of an example that might be related to what you're thinking of, is the interviewer saying, hey, just letting you know, I'm going to be interrupting you a lot. So just expect me to interrupt you a lot. And they don't give you any explanation. Like, I think it's different if someone is saying, I'm going to interrupt you a lot because there's just so much I want to chat with you about and I want to uncover all of your knowledge. I think that is very different. Like, when you explain the attention, it really puts the candidate at ease and gives them context, which is very different from the interviewer simply saying, yeah, I'm just going to be interrupting you a lot. I do this to a lot of candidates because I feel like candidates are not good at giving a good answer quickly. So just know that I'll be interrupting you a lot. And mm-hmm. it's like, I feel like there are a lot of ways to uncover someone's ability, and if someone's only method for uncovering your knowledge is by interrupting you a lot, I don't know. I think that says a little bit about this person's communication skills. But anyways, back to you.
Yeah, so another intimidation tactic I have experienced is as a software engineer, having been an interviewer myself, I know that the whole point of, you know, me potentially giving a really challenging coding problem is actually to just hear how they go about problem solving. I think that, but I've also been in interviews where I think people don't really focus on the problem solving aspect and they actually focus more on intimidating the other person. And I think the intent of these intimidation tactics is to see like how well you handle stress or how well you handle difficult personalities. But one, is that indicative of the fact that there are difficult personalities that you're going to have to work with at your job? Or two, why is that important if that's not going to be a situation you run into? And I think that I've always kind of been confused as to why people do this, because I think that, yes, a job can be really stressful and can require a lot of energy from someone and also be very challenging in a lot of ways. But you can say that about any type of job. I feel like it's been proven in studies over and over again that people thrive by not being intimidated. They actually thrive by being supported and feeling encouraged. And so I think this is less about like it being indicative about the job potentially, but I think it just makes no sense why someone would want to just batter your self-esteem in an interview and potentially just completely color and change the way that you view this job and this team.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Unfortunately, it's such a common practice. The persona or the stereotype of the brilliant jerk is one that a lot of companies value. And I don't know that I would want to work for a company that puts those people on a pedestal. No matter how prestigious
it is.
Yeah, I don't care. My daily experience of work is so much more important than the boost of happiness and pride I get from like a prestigious job. Anyways. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The seventh red flag has to do with the progression of the interview process. So let's say in the interview process, you get asked a lot of behavioral questions. You would kind of think, and let's say that the scope and the responsibilities are very clear, very specific about the project that you're going to be working on, and you've already had open conversations about that early on in the process. And you've also been, this actually happened to me because I used your tip, Sophia, of asking the recruiter or the interviewer of what quality are you looking for in the best candidate, or like what's the hardest part about finding the best candidate. And so the answer I got was very specific to the role and its responsibilities. The red flag is when later in the interview process, you're still getting asked really generic questions. If you've gotten behavioral questions, you're still getting the questions of, tell me about a time when you had a conflict with someone, or tell me about a time. And it's not at all specific to the job's responsibilities. I think that this is a red flag because I feel like this shows that they're not being really rigorous about the kind of people that they're looking for. Because honestly, what does two more behavioral questions about me give them in terms of finding the right fit of this job? And I think this also can lend itself to that ambiguity that we talked about earlier of this role apparently being feeling very ambiguous for people to know what they're looking for. And even if I feel like I have a really good understanding, it kind of seems like the other people don't really have a good understanding and don't really know what they want to screen for. And so I think that can be a red flag for sure. And so what this means for your job is that you, again, may run into misalignment in the job's responsibilities, and you may doubt whether they actually felt like they found the right person for the role because they had kind of maybe fallen back on company standards or whatever, and they haven't really taken advantage of the fact that they got four more interviews out of you and they kept asking generic questions of you.
Very interesting. I think this is really helpful, not just for candidates, but for interviewers who are designing an interview process, especially if you're at a startup and newer to this, because you might think this is a very benign thing. You might think like, oh, just organized interview, you know, why does it matter? It really matters. Like the candidates are paying attention and questioning your level of focus and preparation and how organized your company is. So that's a great one.
Yeah. The last potential red flag, which is actually more of an open question for us to talk about. So we've had our fair shares of interviews that center around the work that the company is doing. So for example, we may receive a case study of creating a feature for the problem area that this company works in. I want to know, how do we feel about this? Because on one hand, I think it lets both parties, like both the interviewee and the interviewer, see whether the way that the interviewee thinks and problem solves or creates things and just thinks about the problem area really aligns with the company goals, which means like they would be a really good candidate. And I think that there is some merit to being able to do it as closely to the work as possible. On the other hand, the most worst case scenario is that they could just steal your ideas and choose not to hire you once they have what they need. So I'm curious, how do you feel about those types of interviews?
Oh my gosh, Tan. This is probably one of the hottest topics in PM interviewing. So I'll share some pros. A challenge in interviewing PMs is that people often look for candidates that have experience in that area. Like, oh, you've worked in social media. Oh, you worked in privacy. But a lot of times candidates just, you know, if you're earlier in career, you don't have that many years of experience and opportunities to jump from team to team. So your resume might not fully demonstrate that you have passion and the ability to transfer your skills to this particular field. And so I think it's a really, in some ways, it can be a really great equalizer regardless of your background and kind of remove bias in that way. Another pro is that, you know, the alternative is asking people to talk a lot about the current projects that they've done in their workplace, but that is really, really dependent on your workplace. Like, to no fault of your own, you could have been reorged 3 times and you only have 3 months to work on each project and the project gets cut. So there's a lot of factors beyond your control that make it impossible for you to really showcase your skills in your current job. So that's another equalizer. The downsides are, one, these exercises usually take up a lot of time, which makes it inaccessible to people who maybe are, for example, are parents and all of their, you know, time outside of their job maybe is spent taking care of their kids. So that's a really big unequalizing factor. One way that people try to mitigate this is they try to put a very harsh, they put a very strict time deadline where it's literally like 2 hours before you present your case. They give you the questions, so you're locked to those 2 hours. So that's like one way people try to like time lock it. And I mean, another con is definitely stealing your ideas thing. One pushback I've heard against the stealing your ideas thing is that some people say the majority of ideas presented in these cases are not that unique to a point where an employee couldn't have come up with that idea, because the employee in that job has more context and can likely come up with a better idea. But I don't know if I believe that.
Yeah.
So those are some pros and cons.
I don't quite believe that also, because like this maybe is talking about like a big company that maybe has a ton of employees that they can source ideas from, and like they're already getting compensated. But if it's like a startup where they're hiring for their first PM or they're hiring for their first content strategist or video strategist, I think this is there are take-home assignments that engineers do as well. But I think I could say pretty confidently that the coding challenge that you do in 3 hours is definitely not of the quality that you would see in the company.
Right. Like you can't copy paste that code into your company.
Yeah, you can't copy paste that at all. But for things like PMs where you are coming up with feature ideas, or for a video strategist that's coming up with video ideas, I think that's really tricky because it's all about the idea. And ideas, no matter how well fleshed out they are or not, like they can still be good ideas that no one has thought of before. So I think maybe for this to be a red flag, maybe this is where you can exercise caution, especially if you are doing interviews where like you're asked to come up with some ideas that are specific to the company.
You know, I do know of one company, DuckDuckGo, which does sort of like similar to Google search, that compensates, at least I know of, engineers for the interview process time.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah. Wow. Isn't that wild?
Mm-hmm. Wait, this needs to be more of a thing.
Yeah. I don't really know what the prestige or like caliber of the company is or how many hours people spend on the interview process, but that was pretty mind-blowing. Yeah. I don't know of any other company.
Because honestly, if I think about that then, I think I'd feel differently about this red flag. I think I'd feel differently about the fact that I'm getting compensated to like come up with ideas. Because at least I got compensated to come up with the idea.
Totally. I think in the ideal scenario, to balance both the employer and their, you know, their limited budget, is ideally the employer is more selective in who they let get to the homework round, and so they offer that pay to fewer people, and then the candidate that means each candidate has more money to receive. They receive more compensation for their time and for their ideas.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. So I mean, I think this one, it's not necessarily like a hard and fast red flag, but it's something that people can kind of take into account if they find themselves doing interviews that that have to do with homework, assignments, and ideas.
You know, I know of some product managers who keep blogs or make TikTok videos of product ideas that they have, which is really smart because then you can just look at the timestamp of the video and be like, hey, maybe after you do an interview, you're like, wait, I just gave a really good idea. Go make a video about it, document it, write a blog post about it, post on LinkedIn about it, just to show that this is your idea.
Yeah, for sure. I'm waiting for the scoop with Sophia.
Thank you. This has been such a great discussion. It's being a candidate is such a vulnerable, you're in such a vulnerable position sometimes because you want to please and you want, I mean, all of these red flags, I would say we name these as red flags, but I would not judge someone for taking a job even if they saw these red flags. I understand that there are so many other factors to balance. There are so many nuances to what we're just making a lot of assumptions about what these red flags mean. There's so many nuances. And so, yeah, I hope anyone who's listening to this, if you took, like, don't feel like we will judge you in any way, because I've taken jobs and I ultimately ended up feeling happy in jobs even though I saw these red flags. I'm just saying that we're just painting the worst case scenario just to empower you with information in case it's helpful.
Yeah, definitely. And I think ultimately, I think being able to identify red flags, or I think this episode is supposed to raise people's awareness and alertness in interview processes, especially when you are so oftentimes the one who is desperate to get the job. And you're not really thinking about, you're only thinking about how you come off. You're not really thinking about how they're coming off to you. And yeah. I think that's, again, just as important to kind of keep in mind. Totally. And that's also, those are also things that you can kind of have an open conversation about with friends after the interview. Like, hey, this happened in the interview. What do you think of that? Is that shady? Is that normal? And just letting that be something that you're not afraid to ask about or to be curious mm-hmm. or look into a little bit more. So mm-hmm. I appreciate all of these, you laying out so many of these red flags for me, Sophia. I'm going to keep these in mind when I go into interview processes now. And I hope that our listeners, I hope that you maybe learn something new, of like a different perspective that you could kind of go into interview processes with, especially when you're looking for a job. If you enjoyed this conversation, think of a friend or a colleague who might enjoy this conversation and let them know that we're on every podcasting platform. And if you enjoyed this conversation and want to play a role in amplifying over 200 episodes of Asian American Perspectives and Stories, please consider sharing a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify on our show so that others can find these stories as well. If you'd like to support us in other ways, you can treat us to a coffee or a boba through our Buy Me a Coffee page in the episode description. And we're also open to collaborating, so if you'd like to hear more from us, you can reach out to us on Instagram or TikTok, or invite us to speak at your school or company. We've done talks and workshops about a wide range of topics based on your organization's interests, ranging from romantic relationships to navigating the workplace, and we would be so excited to hear from you via email at bambooandglass@gmail.com. And with that, I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your week, and we will chat with you next Sunday. Bye!